on Jazz FM. This is The Business Breakfast with Owanda. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.
It's been a bit of a sterling story overnight, hasn't it, given Brexit? I'd like your take on it, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, the pound's come under quite heavy pressure. I must say, it does just remind me a lot of what we've seen over and over again, really, over the course of the last couple of years. We've got to ask ourselves the question, has anything really changed? Is this a hard deadline in October? No, both sides are obviously alluding to it, but we've seen these deadlines pushed back over and over again. We've seen the threat of no deal unless the other side yields over and over again. So as far as I'm concerned, it's not really changed something. The only difference really is that the walls are closing in because we are rapidly approaching the end of the year. But what it does just remind us is that these markets are extremely sensitive to the risk of no deal Brexit. In the past, there has been a third option, which is an extension, but that clearly is off the table this time. So we are very much heading for the two scenarios. And whereas people in the markets have feared a no-deal Brexit in the past, in the midst of a pandemic, you have to imagine that the no-deal Brexit risk is more severe. So the sensitivity in these markets is very much still there. And it's, if anything, it's growing because such a simple comment to trigger such a large one-day sell-off is quite...
Indeed, and a comment that still really hasn't been explained, has it? I mean, given as the day wore on, you know, various people wheeled on, weren't they, to say, no, it's just tidying up some details. But actually, the fact of it is, it was the usual clumsiness we've come to expect. And as you say, the markets don't like that at all.
No, they don't. It's the old adage, right? The market hates uncertainty, but this uncertainty has existed for a long time. Normally, you become accustomed to this and you kind of adapt, but that just doesn't seem to be the case become Brexit. And I think that lends itself to the unpredictability that we are dealing with here. I think the government is viewed as being a little bit more unpredictable, potentially, than governments that we've seen in the past, more liable to potentially adopting the no-deal Brexit route rather than settling for a deal that's currently in place. Whether that's true or not is an entirely different matter. But as I say, it's the sensitivity, I think, that we are seeing to these Brexit headlines that just makes me think it's going to be an extremely volatile month or two, because these headlines aren't going anywhere. We're going to get them on an increasingly daily basis from both sides as they both try to get these final parts of the deal wrapped up in their favour. Naturally, what's going to happen is we are likely to see both sides yield a bit and give something up to get this deal over the line. But it's not going to stop the hard talking. I mean, let's face it, if me or you or anyone else was in a negotiation, we'd be doing exactly the same thing to try and get these final points in our favour. Whether they work or not doesn't really matter.
We had a weekend, a couple of weekends ago, didn't we, about, you know, tax cuts or tax increases or whatever it may be, and all that discussion, and a lot of kite flying was going on. Leaving that to one side now, there's a lot of kite flying going about the furlough scheme, isn't it? Do you feel as though it is going to be extended, given that British industry, in the person of the CBI to start with, has been actually saying to government, you know, that we ought to continue with this because a third of companies are going to lay people off. There's that side to it. Of course, the other side is someone's going to have to pay for it in the end. What's your feeling? Do you think the slope off, the tapering off, is shallowing slightly?
It always comes down to the debate of what it saves versus what it costs. And the furlough scheme has been very generous up until this point, but it's one that many countries around the world have adopted. The difference between the UK and much of Europe, for example, is that the UK scheme does come to an end in October, whereas countries across Europe, France, Germany, etc., have extended those. Germany actually to the end of 2021. So there's a significant difference as far as the end date is concerned. The risk to the government is that they spend all of this cash preserving all of these jobs, but in wrapping them up slightly too soon, you still get higher levels of unemployment. So you get both the benefits bill at the end, the structural unemployment, and all the downside that comes with that, on top of the furlough bill that you've accumulated so far. So the end point is really quite significant. That's not just to say that we can always afford to just throw cash at these problems, but if you're going to engage on a scheme like this, I think you have to get the end point very right. And I do wonder whether they're just bringing this in a little bit too soon, especially when it's the same government that's warning about the risks of a significant second wave come the winter, as far as the coronavirus is concerned, and everything that comes with that. Wrapping up the furlough scheme just in front of that, it suggests to me that the government may be forced into another U-turn. And again, this is a government that's U-turned on a number of different issues. And therefore, you wouldn't bet against it doing the same as far as the furlough scheme is concerned.
And on the subject of a second wave, I mean, the news yesterday, the general news was dominated by that, wasn't it? By various scientists coming on and saying it is very extremely likely there'll be a second wave. And we've seen increased places under lockdown again. That adds to your point significantly, doesn't it? I would have thought.
It does. The risk of the second wave, I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist, I'm not a scientist, so like, I wouldn't really want to necessarily comment on or give my view on how likely or unlikely this is, but you would imagine that people staying indoors more, the humidity, etc., all of these different things does lend itself to higher risks, especially if people are congregating different age groups around Christmas. We all know what it's like. So you can imagine that it kind of starts to make sense, and the government is going to have people in their areas who are far more educated on the issue than we all are, which again makes the decision to end in October all that more confusing. It seems to me that they are maybe starting to worry a little bit about the short-term bill rather than the longer-term consequences. So like I say, I wouldn't be surprised if they do extend it. The risk again, though, is by extending it, it may be the right decision, but it does just add to this this indication that they are being a little bit incompetent, because what businesses need is the warning that they're going to do these things so they don't announce these layoffs earlier. There's going to be a number of companies who are going to be laying off staff in anticipation of the furlough scheme ending in August. These are jobs that could have been saved if the government had acted sooner, assuming, of course, they do end it.
It is extraordinary. It's the same old story, isn't it? The disconnect between government and business once again, writ large. It is quite extraordinary. Now, just talking about big utterances, somebody who is not used to particular subtlety, of course, is President Trump, and he's going into an election now using the Labor Day holiday yesterday to talk about decoupling the US economy from China. That may ring particularly significantly if you're going for America first. That's completely unrealistic, I would have thought.
It is. We have to remember that Trump's going into this election with a deficit in the polls. We've been talking for some months about the fact that we are going to see them step up their anti-China rhetoric in order to try and solidify the base, in particular with regards to China, this kind of nationalistic America first approach. And this just seems to be another extension of that, adding more companies to the list of those who are going to effectively be punished because of their links to the Chinese regime. And this kind of decoupling further just encompasses that. The difficulty that we ultimately have is that the US has spent decades building up leverage by making itself so important, which means that if they ever need to impose these powers, which they've effectively generated, that they can do so. And it seems that all of this leverage is now just being used up in this kind of politicized way. And all we're going to see, if this does become a more longer term approach, then we're going to see naturally Chinese companies, or the Chinese regime, is going to look to effectively decouple itself from the US, because it's not really the US that's necessarily reliant on China. It's very much the other way around in this particular space. So what we're going to see is we're going to see China decide to develop and throw money at developing its own industry, which means that it's going to be, for example, the US chip makers, etc., the semiconductor industry, that's going to suffer as a result of huge competition from abroad. So it is a bit of a curious approach from the Trump administration, but it's also a desperate approach going into an election in 2 months' time.
Craig Ellam, thank you very much indeed. Craig Ellam there, Chief Market Analyst at Oanda.
The Business Breakfast on Jazz FM with Oanda. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.